Penguin Random House Audio presents Charged, the new movement to transform American prosecution and end mass incarceration by Emily Bazelon. Read for you by Cassandra Campbell. For my parents, Rick and Eileen, and my sisters, Lara, Jill, and Dana, for their strong moral compass. Then the crowd made noise that gathered and grew until it was loud and was loud as the sea. What it meant or would mean was not yet fixed, nor could be, though human beings ever tilt toward we. Elizabeth Alexander. Introduction. The gun was an offering. Kevin heard about it around midnight on a May evening. He'd gone to the corner store to buy a single cigarette and was heading back to his high-rise in a housing project in Brownsville, a neighborhood in the middle of Brooklyn. The people he'd grown up with were often out at night, and he saw a knot of them, young men around his age, 20, hanging out by a pair of green benches in a grassy spot near his building. As they swapped greetings, Kevin's friend Mason flicked his eyes at a plastic shopping bag on the ground, lying there like a piece of trash. "We got the John," he said. John could stand for a lot of things, a pair of shoes, a person. But Kevin knew exactly what Mason meant. There was a gun in that bag. "I know things are crazy for y'all here," Mason said. "So I got this for you." The police were a frequent presence around the projects, so no one picked up the bag or asked to see the gun. Kevin said his goodbyes and started walking away in the alert and fluid way he had, shoulders back and arms swinging, tall and lean and young, his hair pulled back in a ponytail, and his gray hoodie sweatshirt zipped, always aware of where he was but trying not to look over his shoulder. It was important not to look skittish, not around his friends, and not if the police were watching. But Kevin also didn't want to hang around with a weapon lying at his feet. He didn't want the trouble a gun brought. Kevin's housing project, a cluster of brick buildings, was one of 18 in Brownsville, making the neighborhood one of the densest concentrations of public housing in the country, with more than 60,000 people packed into 1.2 square miles. The project could feel like a small town, in an old-fashioned way. It had its own recreation center and known personalities and raffish identity. Kevin got a laugh out of the nicknames for the loudmouths or tough guys, Kool-Aid and Lilhead and OG Lock. He'd lived there his whole life, with his older sister and her 2-year-old daughter, his younger brother and his mother, who'd raised her kids mostly on her own, working retail jobs and caring for the elderly and disabled. The average rent in the Brownsville projects was $430 a month. Families tended to stay for years once they got off the waiting list for an apartment. "We stick together," Kevin said. "We went to school together. Your apartment might be on top of mine. Your mom might have babysat me." On a good day, the project's residents would come outside to play music and catch up. You knew it was spring when older people brought small towels to sit on and raised their faces to the sun. "That kind of day? I'm going to be where everyone is, the girls, the mamas, the babies," Kevin said, thinking on it. "That kind of day? It's perfect." But Brownsville was also one of New York's most disadvantaged communities, measured by health as well as economic insecurity, and one of its most dangerous. The year Kevin was 12, more than 100 people were shot in and around Brownsville, and another 30 were killed, about half the number in all of Manhattan. Guns were a fact of life. "I could find someone with a gun before I could find someone with a diploma," Kevin told me. Over the years, he'd lost people he knew, including close friends. The beefing wasn't mainly between the gangs with well-known names, like the Bloods or the Crips. They existed, but their presence in the neighborhood was fading. More
Sample complete. Ready to continue?